Hey guys, it's Chris Denson from Innovation Crush. This episode is brought to you by Right Networks. Right Networks helps you securely transition your accounting-based desktop applications into the cloud, regardless of which version you're using. As a partner you can trust, they take away the burden of IT so you have more time to focus on your business. This makes keeping close track of your finances and operations so much easier. Work from anywhere, anytime. Their support team is there for you around the clock. Being on the cloud means you and your team can work together from anywhere, at any time, giving you maximum flexibility. Never again will you have to drive to the office on a Saturday when you realize you forgot to submit the numbers to your boss. Just pop open your laptop or your smartphone, take care of it from home, and get back to having a life. It's an always-on world for small businesses, and Right Networks gets that. To learn more, give Right Networks a call at 888-417-4448, extension 1, and tell them Chris from Innovation Crush sent you. Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another installment of Innovation Crush. It's me, Chris Denson, your gracious host, coming at you once again live from the SAE Institute in Los Angeles, the School of Audio Engineering. Thank you for joining us, Ann Hand.
Thank you for having me.
You have a fun name to say, Ann Hand.
It is a funny one.
In case you guys are tuning in for the first time ever, this show covers all things innovation, ideas, creativity, and smart people doing smart things. So welcome. Thank you for stopping by.
It's my pleasure.
You excited?
Absolutely. It's Friday.
It is Friday. That's the best day to record, I think.
We should have
just had some drinks and called it an early happy hour. although you probably can't talk about that because Super League. Tell us a little bit about you and Super League and give us the 90-second version of your world so far.
Oh, gosh. So Super League launched about 2.5 years ago. The idea was with the explosion of esports and all of this very smart money, seeing the huge opportunity at the professional level, isn't it time for an amateur league system? Kind of inevitable that you would need a feeder system for the pro level of esports. And equally, too, there's 2.6 billion gamers out there that would love to have some kind of competitive rec league around the games they love to get an added human touch dimension and teamwork dimension to what they love.
Tell us about, at least in this current stage, how that actualizes. You know, what does this amateur league look like?
Yeah, great question. We started out with Minecraft, which is a 6 to 14-year-old game, kind of good for kids. You're learning about STEM-based learning. So think Little League. In the early days, we've been historically using movie theaters as our playing field. You know why? Because they're empty a lot. And they as well just create a great AV experience with the big screen and the thunderous sound. We then moved into an older game, League of Legends, kind of the crown jewel of esports, so to speak, and now run much more heightened competitions with older players who really are people who are moving up the rankings of League and really want to show their chops and physical live environments that they have what it takes to make it to a pro team. The other really cool thing we've done in the last few months is we've introduced a city layer to it. So we pride ourselves with the fact that we're the first ever city-based esports league. So we now have 12 cities across the United States. So we are the owners and operators of teams like the LA Shockwaves, the Chicago Force, the Dallas Dynamite, the Miami Menace, the Boston Revolt, and so on. And these are unifying gaming clubs for which all the different games that we start to bring physical leagues around will join and kind of represent their hometown in city v city battles. So on any given day, we can have a ton of kids in LA going head to head against a ton of kids in Chicago. And as we move into the older game products, it's the same. We even have right now a father who plays on our League of Legends LA Shockwaves team, and his daughter, his 6-year-old daughter, plays on our League of Legends, or our Minecraft, I should say, LA Shockwaves team. So it's pretty cool to see how families game together now, and that gaming is not something people grow out of.
That's interesting, and I still think, and congratulations, all that stuff is like amazing. I spent some time working for Machinima for a couple mm-hmm. of years, so I know the space to some extent, not as much as you do, but you know, there's always this gamer stigma that stands out. Like, it's a fat kid in the basement on his mom's couch and never gets off. What have you learned about the gamer, right? That person, that individual that you guys touch every day?
You know, that is probably the the biggest thing that has impacted me. And it's interesting, when I first went to the first few events, when I was deciding to jump in and work at Super League, I was kind of blown away by the reaction of the kids and the parents and how much they saw that we were bringing a real positive, permissible, benefit to gaming. But the biggest insight I've had over the last 6 months is I've gone out, you know, we've run now over 1,800 events across the U.S., and I've realized something about myself, about how much a year or so ago, I as well was almost playing into that stigma a bit. You know, we talk about players being disconnected and, oh, isn't this great? We're bringing friendship and teamwork to them. Well, the truth is about the gamers that we've had the real opportunity to meet is that it is a hugely diverse audience. And I don't mean diverse in the gender or ethnicity traditional lines. I'm talking about personality diversity, game style diversity. They are multifaceted, hugely successful people. And it's really helped me start to change some of my own language around the fact that Super League's role, I think, is really to start to debunk a lot of that. Tons of stats are out there that, you know, gamers have higher college graduation rates than traditional sports fans, higher average household incomes. And when you go to a Super League event, you can feel it. You can feel the richness of the fabric of people that we're bringing together. And so I feel that's a big core part of the brand, is we're here to celebrate the everyday mainstream gamer and shine a much brighter light on really how great they are. It's so much less about a Super League and so much more about how it's a platform for them.
That's fantastic. And, I love the fact that you've kind of tapped into a psychography, and a broad one at that. It's like, all right, there is a broad diaspora of who this individual is. Have you guys as a company gotten into sort of the cognitive results of gaming, especially since you're dealing with kids? And, you know, if I'm a parent, I'm even as much as I do know, I have a 12-year-old girl. And I'm like, oh, less screen time. Like, be careful. And granted, there should be some of that. But what have you learned about the cognitive results and benefits of, you know, teamwork in a gaming environment?
Absolutely. So the first thing out of the gate, you know, and I don't want to pretend for a minute that this was a grand design, but to start with Minecraft, which is increasingly used for STEM-based learning in schools, you know, one that parents and teachers really get behind. Then to be so fortunate to have our partnership with Riot around League of Legends, which, you know, there's now over 30 universities that offer esports scholarships, and the lion's share of those are around League, because it is a game that has so many layers of strategic and critical thinking.
That's funny. That's a relatively new thing, because I know it was, what, two or three years ago that I think Northwestern was one of the first schools to offer a gamer scholarship. Yeah. And then
over 30.
Right.
Yeah. That's crazy. UC Irvine, Robert Morris University, there's a lot of schools that were real pioneers in that space. And so now, you know, it's like now the benefits of these games and the way that it really does lead to greater outcomes, more career paths, is starting to really be accepted. And then you add the human touch layer of Super League. You know, I always kind of, as a joke, say internally to the team, look, I can hit a tennis ball against a garage door all day long and learn tennis, but you don't really get into character building until you join a team. And so for us, you know, when you start to take all of these great things that get developed in games and you add that human touch and that teamwork perspective that we can bring, we really feel like we are making a huge difference in, you know, the potential outcomes for folks. And the other great thing that we've learned a lot from Riot along the way is just the fact that when you know the people you're playing with in real life, there's less toxicity in the game. And also, the more you know the people you're playing with in real life, even if you're playing at home online, you start to just know each other better. So the more that you can have those real life experiences with each other, the more you will advance your skills faster. And we already have anecdotal proof of that. So we have a great team of Silver League of Legends players that came together as members of the Chicago Force. They had never met prior.
I love the name for some reason. It's the Chicago Force.
It's the Chicago Force. We love that one. And they won our first season of City Champs back in November. In fact, they just won the second season as well. So they are a little dynasty is starting to form with the Chicago Force. But the silver team that met has now entered different online competitions and recently beat a diamond team. And we also have some anecdotal proof that people are actually progressing through the rankings of League of Legends faster because of this physical component, not only because you learn more from each other, but also because you've got each other's backs because you're friends.
And you're no psychology doctor.
No.
You have
but I play one on TV.
And you play against one on TV. Are you guys going to be on TV at any time soon?
I would like that. Right. There's some pretty rich content.
Well, speaking of which, so look, I was going to back up the you are not a doctor, but historically, I mean, your resume kind of speaks volumes in a bunch of non-related industries. Gas and oil with BP, McDonald's, closely related, but not quite.
Yeah.
And Project Frog and your like real estate development. Tell us a little bit about your checkered past and how you ended up making game time for kids.
I know it is crazy. In fact, in the early days, I had a lot of people say to me, like, what is this mess of a career? And even sometimes I had to kind of sit and look at it and wonder the same. But, you know, I did kind of a classic thing you did 25 years ago out of university. The goal was to go work for a big company. And so I went and I worked for Mobile Oil and just kind of worked my way through the rankings, stopped a little bit at McDonald's Corporation for a while, learning about how to build and operate fast food restaurants. But a lot of time in B2B and B2C businesses, very fortunate at the end that I spent about half my career internationally between Hong Kong and London, got to run some global businesses. You know, that was kind of winning and making it back then.
Yeah.
And I was about 20 years in and I met some venture capitalists who said, hey, you know, did you ever think about trying an early stage company? Your personality type kind of fits, you know, even though you look on paper like an old school, or, you know, kind of large company gal. I always ran very flat teams. Really kind of believe in pushing down decision-making, very scrappy. I'm from the Midwest, so I think there's something inherently you kind of can't get out of me that mm-hmm. way. And it's interesting.
I do.
Yeah. And and my dad was an entrepreneur. And in some ways, it's funny that I have three sisters and two went into banking and one into academia and I went into energy. So I guess probably playing into type, we went the other way, right? If you grow up in an entrepreneur's household, you all go for stable
right,
jobs.
Right.
But I think they were right. There's something in me that likes that scrappiness. And so I had worked a lot in clean tech, and that seemed like, you know, kind of green energy and renewables. And so that was an easy entry point for me because it was something that I had a lot of deep experience with. Ran a company up in the Bay Area for about 5 years, but my home is here in LA, so I was commuting. And all of a sudden, the whole LA venture, you know, world exploded.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, LA was really becoming a really relevant city in the conversation. And so just started to meet some different investors. And the board members at Super League kept saying, this is perfect for you. And my first reaction was, no, not at all. I mean, I certainly hung out at the arcade growing up. I
right.
very proudly tell my team members that
your experience was low.
But I can take any of them down in Galaga or Centipede.
Oh, they're like, all right. Yeah. Exactly. If you got a trackball,
yeah.
You're
exactly.
good.
Exactly. But I did at first kind of question my own kind of relevance to the space. And you know what I found is it's classic for all kind of marketing. It's not about what I do. It's about deeply understanding the customer that we're serving does. And partnering with, like, you know, Microsoft, who owns Minecraft and Riot, you know, that's so core to who they are is player first. And so I just kind of leapt off and went for it. And frankly, going to events, talking to the gamers, talking to the parents in the case of the Minecraft product, I really identified with how much this was resonating with people and it was meaningful for them.
Right.
And so I must say that the biggest fear I had was because I'm not a League of Legends player. You know, I really thought to myself, can I do what I need to do and for Super League. And I will say the reception that Super League has gotten from the game publishers and all the wider people in the gaming ecosystem has really been impressive. It's just a super collegial atmosphere. And I know that's not what people consistently think or speculate about the video gaming space, but it's completely counter, you know, to everything that I've experienced. It's been wonderful.
Well, it's also a very like close-knit and hard to penetrate community.
Yes.
And here you are, a woman, and you know, and a suit, if you will. Like, mm-hmm. Did you find that you had to change people's perceptions about you, especially from a business development perspective, like going into rooms with real gamers and you know, saying, hey, I'm going to really change your life.
Yeah, no, it's a great question because it's so spot on. It's all the things that were going through my mind in those early months. And really what I found was people really appreciated what I could bring to the table. I think because esports is so nascent. And I think because it is an industry that maybe has always been a little kind of hard to understand or a little elusive maybe to some people who were looking from the outside in. I think that they like the fact that it's inevitable that there's going to have to be people from other industries who come in and who have different insights to bring or different learnings to bring, because this is huge and it's going to get even, you know, way bigger than it is now. And I think that takes a village a bit, and it right. takes a group of a lot of us from different perspectives. And also, these games are exploding in a way that I think even makes a game publisher say, I'm looking now at a business on a whole different level than right. just being just, you know, simply a publisher of a game. I'm now a commissioner of a sports league. I'm operating on so many dimensions that I think their acceptance of people from the outside has been strong.
I think some of the resistance, whether it's, you know, resistance you placed on yourself or resistance yep. you may have gotten from the community in the beginning. You mentioned the word fear, right? How does Anne Hand deal with fear?
Oh my gosh, that's pretty deep.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Haven't listened to the show yet, have you?
You know,
it's a lot of tears have been shed on this side.
I like that. No, I think that, you know, I'm in my mid-40s. I've been delighted with the fact that when certain things haven't gone my way in life, personally and professionally, I now have a pretty good toolkit. And I kind of have a good amount of confidence that if I kind of stay calm, confident, and determined, a path will emerge. It may not be always pretty or fun, but there's a point to it. And I think that the same thing is kind of just keep going back in every day. And also, you know, I now know a lot more about who I am and what I stand for, my value set. And I have a really strong belief, perhaps completely flawed, that if you stay really true to yourself and you're very transparent about what you're good at and not, that people will be kind. And I did feel that way with the publishers. I never tried to pretend that I knew their game better than they did, right. or that I had any unique, you know, special knowledge about it. And I think they appreciated that honesty. But I did have a lot of points of view about things that I could bring to their community that would be very fun and additive to this beautiful game they've made. And right. And again, a lot of this is just listening. I mean, they came to us because they know their community better than anybody. So they know there's a reason why Super League makes sense for their community. So a lot of it is just listening to them and then really taking it very seriously about what we've been entrusted with. And I think that's something that's universal, whether you're in, you know, the gaming industry or the energy industry, is really teaching the team about the respect for strategic partnerships and what that means, because I think people often think those things are just purely commercial, but really big partner deals happen because there's a relationship that's formed and there is a lot of trust. And when something doesn't go well, you know, being the first to throw the flag say, we didn't do as well as we could have, but we care enough that we don't want to hide this from you. We want to put this out there and tell you how we're going to fix it.
Right. No, and I think that it, again, speaks to like how people handle fear. Because I think, you know, I just went through a situation in the last couple of days where a project was starting to tank. And we were like, all right, full transparency, client, here's what's happening. And they were like, we're going to need mojitos after this. And yes. So it was everything that I thought, like, you know, you go in thinking they're going to hate this. We better fix it immediately and go. But no, like a true partnership, even if it is a client, you know, vendor or whatever relationship, it is a partnership. And we're in this
absolutely
together.
Absolutely. And even with your bosses, I mean, being the first to say, I could have done a way better job on this project. I'm disappointed that, you know, we just had a great review, but let me tell you the three things that that are keeping me up at night. There's power in speaking your truth and owning it. And those are the kinds of things that, you know, as I just said, they're kind of universal. Those right. are just life lessons. And you want to do that same thing in your personal relationships as well. So I think that's the way that we've been able to get as far as we have. Is because I think we've walked into the rooms with these really big titan companies that have these killer games and communities, and I think we've created a real kind of feeling of trust and respect and kindness.
I'm going to be honest with you. Super League is not like a rocket science idea.
It's not.
Why is it working, and why didn't anyone do it before? What happened? Was it timing right? What's the kind of gumbo that went into making this the time to have a Super League?
No, it's a great question, Ben. I love your point, because in a way, it was almost the simplicity of it that made me question it at the start. You know, it was just a little too obvious, right? You know, it's a little league. Let's use empty movie theaters.
Like, it was a couple of years ago when I first came across the Super League, and the person that told me about it was like, it's like Little League for gamers. And I was like, I was almost mad at myself for not having thought of it. Like, it is one of those kind of ideas. Like, man, like, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, but it's totally true. I mean, look. I think there's been some interesting inflection points. When I first joined, it was all about, as you say, Little League for gamers. And it still is that in many ways. But the beautiful technology platform that we have developed is a true kind of end-to-end tournament system. And it's a matchmaking system. You can now find people of your level in locally, which is a really hard thing to do, to find people, you know, in your hometown that you can play with who are of your same ranking. This kind of highly fragmented gaming community is looking for ways to connect and bond around games they love. And that's what's been missing, is that hyper-local focus. So we start with leagues. We happen to use theaters. But frankly, the platform's been built in a way that we're really agnostic to venues. So, you know, somebody can run a Super League system in their schools. So you can see us starting to move into interscholastic opportunities. We just recently partnered with a great land center in Chicago, one of our Midwestern fellow towns. And so that they could kind of pull a bit of a lock-in around one of our tournaments. So we really see ourselves as an enabler of ways for all the stakeholders of the local gaming system to find ways to come together and kind of look, the city team thing for me is another place where, like, my heart kind of skips a beat a little bit, because right. what I've been so fascinated by, you know, I played a lot of traditional sports. You know, when it's March Madness time, I'm definitely going for all of my Big Ten, you know, favorite teams. And I didn't know how gamers would take to the city-based, you know, kind of logos and jerseys and all of that. And their reaction was no different than the way that I feel about all the teams that I love.
That's typical.
And what it really shows you is it's inherent in all of us, this basic human desire to represent and root for our hometown is even bigger than maybe the game that we love. And what's cool for me about that is it means that Super League has an opportunity to actually start to be a bit of journey makers for you. You know, we're giving you new journeys to play League of Legends or Minecraft in new ways. Now you can play as part of a larger team, and you can be a part of fighting and defending your city. Maybe we create a journey for you that's a path to the pros, and that's pretty cool. But we're also a part of your life as you move through other games. So you grow out of Minecraft at some point and you move into League of Legends or other great games.
Right.
We have an opportunity for it to kind of stick with you through that journey. And I think that that's pretty meaningful what we've started. So, you know, it started as little leagues and empty movie theaters. But to me, it's become so much more meaningful on the human growth, kind of individual development side, this way we're creating a real sense of belonging and bringing like a glory of pursuit that kind of the everyday gamer hasn't had.
Well, that, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because when I was at Machinima, that was the, one of the, like, I always look for like goosebump moments when I'm starting to work with the company. And they started just talking about like, this was a home for a community that really didn't have a hub. They really, you know, there was like 1UP. There were a couple of like publications, but we want to celebrate you, gaming community. And yes, there's other similar networks, but the arts community has been celebrated forever, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a basketball player, great. If you're a gamer, it's like there was no real place for you. And there's still only a few. So kudos to that. I just had a thought while you were talking, and your dad being an entrepreneur and you kind of going a more traditional career route, what, kind of looking back, did you pick up from your childhood or from your dad that you're doing now or that you're just kind of seeing kind of blossom in your own life?
It's funny because being one of four girls, but being the youngest, you know, I remember little moments of like getting the baseball and the baseball bat under the Christmas tree. You know, there were, and he always said like, you know, girls worship their dads. And so there was definitely, you know, much love for all things dad. But I think somewhere, even without him prompting it, I kind of wanted to have a career for him or to be able to have those types of conversations with him. And I do remember a conversation probably around like 10, 11, 12 years old where he prompted a chat at the dinner table about like, what hasn't been invented? What would you invent? And I'm pretty certain, although I have not had this checked out with anybody at Procter & Gamble, but I think I came up with the flip-top cap for toothpaste at that table because I was so grossed out at how messy screwing on a toothpaste cap was back then. But there was also a moment where I told him that I wanted to be the president of IBM. And when I went off to college, my parents moved me in the dorm, and there was a letter that I found under my pillow after they had left me my first night. And he reminded me that I was going to be the president of IBM. And when I called him my senior of college and I told him I got a job with Mobil Oil, jokingly, he said, but what about IBM? And the truth is I had interviewed with IBM and they rejected me. So I never made it past the first interview. But I think somewhere deep inside I was definitely always worked in his businesses growing up and always loved that entrepreneurial creative spirit and also had that real drive to kind of just have fun making him proud and have that opportunity to talk about work with him. And I still call him up and tell him about fundraising or what we're doing. Now, I will say this is the first job I've done where I really have struggled to help my father get it. So this is that little generational moment where when I try to explain that gaming isn't something you grow out of anymore, that it's much like golf. You know, he's had a relationship with golf his whole life. Even if he wasn't always playing golf because he had little kids or couldn't afford to, it's still something that he watches on TV. Maybe he does on a vacation. And I've tried to help him see gaming that way. And he still kind of tilts his head and looks at me funny, but
he's like, you know,
but he trusts my instincts. So.
Yeah, you don't know. Maybe not IBM. Well, you'll get there. But speaking of brands, right? That's a wonderful. Like, I love your dad already. I hope he can be my dad one day. Just like working with brands, I think when you go into the game, like one of the words that comes to mind for me is authenticity, and the work is thrown all over marketing all the time. But I feel like in gaming, it's real. So what kind of brands have you worked with, especially because you're working with like a vast number of ages, you know, age ranges, and there's rules and regulations, but also products and services that belong there and want to be there, et cetera, et cetera. How do you like traverse the brand ecosystem when it comes to partners?
It's a great question, because in the early days, because we were so nervous about the authenticity thing, almost, I would say, over-indexing on it. And now with the closer that I've been to it, realizing we shouldn't be afraid. If there's meaningful engagement and storylines, if there's real benefits from a membership point of view to gamers, we shouldn't be afraid of being a marketing channel for brands that matter to our players, and trust that they will see that messaging and those benefits. And so that has now become our lens, is, you know, why would this make the experience that we're offering better? And if we can answer that question, then we feel good about bringing the right brand partner deals together. But certainly in the early days, we weren't chasing brands because of authenticity concerns. And also, frankly, I mean, we didn't have much reach. It's like, if you looked at us on a rate card, you'd say, oh, you know, 2,000 players, that's worth $20. You know, it's not right. Like, it's not like a traditional marketer would see that value that way. But what we knew was that we were creating really unique experiences. And this is definitely a world where experiences matter most. And these are deep engagement experiences. You know, you're there for 3 hours. You're a team. You're playing together in ways that you can't play when you're back at home playing online. And so out of the gate from the Minecraft brand, yes, because it's a younger audience, we have to be very careful. We did receive an investment from Nickelodeon in our last round. That was one where right out of the gate, you could just feel it, that they were as protective about the experience and the players as we felt. Nickelodeon is all about fun. It's right. about getting slimed and having mm-hmm. a good time. And there's just so much about what their brand stands for that felt like if we brought them into a Super League experience, it would only make it more fun for the kids. So we could just see how much richer our experiences could be with a partnership like that. Similarly, we just recently did a bit of a partner deal with AMD around our League of Legends play. And the reason was, is that we often at our city events, when you can imagine, we now have, you know, tons of players in a theater taking on, you know, another city in real time. These are serious battles. And we've got, you know, these are level 30 players. They're serious. We had even like master and challenger level players in the game. And can you imagine if your laptop blew up in the middle of these 2 hours?
Right.
And so AMD, it was a big operational thing we needed to solve for. We needed a fleet of high-end gaming laptops that would be there on reserve for gamers, so that we wouldn't, you know, if any hardware failure occurred, that, you know, whether it be the Chicago Force or the Boston Revolt, that right. that player could get back into the game.
Like a pit team.
Yeah.
Like in NASCAR.
Exactly. Exactly. And so that seemed like a no-brainer to us. Like that was really something that directly benefited the player. So, and, you know, we're not slapping logos everywhere. This isn't a NASCAR car. These are, you know, meaningful integrations that actually make the whole event better.
So gaming is very tangential to technology, mm-hmm. Especially with AR and VR and RR. I just made that one up. But I should have just left it and confused the audience. They're like, oh, we got to Google that.
I know. RR. I was thinking the same thing. Railroads.
It's what SEALs like. So let's move it. Let's move on. How have you seen that come up in your world? Like, are you doing VR-oriented challenges? Are you working with the Oculuses of the world? Are you kind of just keeping it like grassroots, brass tacks, you know, purists? Where are you going with
it's funny. We definitely had moments where we kind of started kind of following little conversations here and there on the VR front and other kind of advanced technologies, and then always seem to come back to the brass tacks, as you say. They're, you know, we're so fortunate to have two of the biggest games in the world. We'll be announcing some other great games in the next few months.
Like
that
what?
I can't tell you. but they're great. And, you know, and keeping with the company we already have, right? Because that's important too. And I think we feel there's just enough that we can do around this existing game library that we have and the next few that we can grow into. I know that VR will play a role at some point. I think for us, we've just got plenty to do that we can kind of wait and see how kind of things shake out in that space.
What does gaming practice look like?
gaming practice.
Yeah, if you have teams, right, and how do you show up? And you're like, all right, let's do some drills.
Actually, it's interesting. So we just started to play with that a little bit. So when we launched this last season of City Champs, the original night was a bit of a meetup and practice night. So you came into the theater, you got your jersey, you kind of found out what teams you were on, got to know people, and then we did do a little bit of practice play. But what you'll see us doing in 2018 is a much more thoughtful season that does steal a little bit from other sports, but really thinking about preseason. Training camps, seasons themselves, postseason, you know, kind of analogies to like all-stars, you know, and combines and things like that. So we'll start to run for both products and future products more of a holistic season. So a spring and a fall that stretches over a course of several weeks. Some of those types of things happen online, so we can reach a much wider audience. We did that with the last season that we just completed of City Champs with the LOL product, where we actually first invited anybody who wanted to play on the online qualifiers to be a part of about a four-day binge tournament online. Nice. And then the best of the best got invited to the physical live event to represent their city. So you'll see us start to stretch these seasons and start to have ways to reach a bigger audience, start to create a bit of fandom and viewership around these events, and also having a more of a postseason so we can really find and graduate those very best players and hopefully start to show off their talent so that they, you know, get a little bit of access or line of sight to the pros.
Have you heard of Andy Walsh, the good Dr. Andy Walsh?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I was just going to make a recommendation.
I like it.
No, he's done a lot of like super cool cognitive studies of traditional athletes and gamers and like kind of cross-pollinated, you know, different skill sets from the physical to the cognitive, and it's pretty cool.
Well, yeah, and I mean, some of the you know, stuff about studying the best esports pro players and the way that they're kind of visually tracking, you know, like 5 to 6 steps ahead, the same way LeBron would. Like it's fascinating how many parallels. I will say in the early days, you know, I really so wanted to apply a traditional sports motif to Super League, and I resisted because I felt I didn't know the customer well enough yet, and I was so nervous about cramming something onto that gamer audience that they'd really reject. Because I thought that while there were some parallels to traditional sports, there were less than more of them. And I would say, for the most part, almost everything has been the same. In fact, there's only, you know, when I think about things like, you know, right now, if you're recruiting for Team Liquid, you can find great players online of, you know, Dota 2 or what have you. But, you know, until you see them in a physical live event experience, until you see how coachable they are, what a good team player they are, how they can handle, you know, the intensity of the live event, you're never going to quite know if they have what it takes at the pro level. You know, things that are very similar to the fact that I could probably, like, make a basket standing on your driveway, but, like, I would not have a hope and a prayer of, like, dribbling, being yelled at in the middle of Staples Center. And so many of the parallels are the same. The only thing that I have found that isn't the same between the two is, you know, it never would occur to me to walk down the street from my house, walk into a YMCA, and watch a lot of random guys I've never met in my life, like, play a pickup basketball game. And yet, you know, the fact that, you know, so much of the viewing of Twitch is actually players learning from people of similar levels.
Right.
But I think that really speaks to the fact that there is this thirst for learning and how to advance your skills. And right now, the way that is met is through these online experiences. And I think Super League starts to really have a cool way to show what can happen in physical environments when you bring in skills training and coaching.
We've talked about a lot. you know, as you've seen oil and gas and hamburgers and houses and gamers and cognitive studies and all these things, what is your current innovation crush? What do you see that's out there that's giving you goosebumps in your own industry, somewhere else out in the world? What's something that's just kind of like, oh my gosh, I wish I had been a part of that?
Oh, I think I'm in it. I mean, not to be, too trite about it, but, we talked about this at the start, how timing is everything. I'll be honest, my last startup, I think, was about 5 years too early. And it's hard to swallow that pill when you're in it, because you know you're doing good and making a difference. And I feel like this is the magic of the space we're in right now with esports is everywhere I go, I ask super smart people who are in and around it, do you think our timing's off? Do you think are we 2 years too early? Are we 1 year too early? And I just can't find anybody who disagrees with the fact that we are creating something. We know it's going to be huge. It's not a question of if, it's when. But I think there's some pretty magical things that are going to happen in the next 24 months in esports. And I feel really bullish that Super League will be at the hub of some of those big moves.
Which leads me to one last question is, in a lot of these industries, when somebody else does it well, a bunch of other ones pop up, right? I think that's even the problem with VR. I think, one person made a headset and a system, then everybody else was like, we're going to make our own.
Why I wanted to shake out before we jump in.
Right. Yeah. And so I think, do you have a game plan on staying ahead of would-be competitors?
It's a great question, because absolutely that kind of fast follower is the thing you're the most afraid of, right? Because to your point, about midway through when you said, why didn't I think of it? It's almost too simple. And so there is a feeling I've always had of looking, behind my shoulder a bit. So far, we haven't seen anybody come into the space. But I think really it's going to come down to really powerful partnerships. I think that, when we talk about, there's a lot of great coaching skill progression companies out there like Ready Up and Gamer Sensei, partnerships with people like that. Partnerships with great Minecraft servers that have really, interesting audiences they can bring to Super League. We feel that we have an opportunity to, obviously, for the game publishers, bring a new dimension to their games and a new experience for their players. But equally, we look to the whole ecosystem of everyone in this space and say, what's the magical group of us that if we stand together and lock arms, we can really have a dominant position?
Yeah.
So
that's great. There's a Jamin Shively, who was an early guest on the show, number four at Microsoft, and then started his own cannabis company. Go figure. How do those things marry?
Computers and cannabis.
Exactly. He said the best way to lead a parade is to find one and get in front of it. So. Wow. Yeah, it looks like that's what you guys have done.
Well said.
The very last thing. Complete this phrase for me. Innovation to me is...
a good idea with a fantastic culture and some smart people who don't give up.
And well said by you too. Thank you. How can people find more about Super League? How can they find you? Do you want to be found?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I invite people to connect with me on LinkedIn and go to superleague.com, register your gamer profile, and tell us what city and game you'd like us to bring next to the family.
And what were those games you said you were bringing again?
Can't tell you. Nice try, though.
That was pretty good. Everyone, this has been another installment of Innovation Crush, and we will talk to you next time.